This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
On the show today, Christian Signorelli, a young entrepreneur. And folks, yes, you're listening to Baseball Outside the Box, and we have a show for you today. But let me tell you, you've been following professional baseball. If you've been following the show, you know that we have a lot of young people getting into the game at all kinds of level, and it's exciting because these young people are bringing new ideas, innovative ideas, and they are challenging the status quo. Well, if you think you want to get in the game of baseball and you don't think you can do that at a young age, you better think twice, because you're going to hear a tremendous story today. We're going to talk about the development of the game, not only in the U.S., but we're going to talk about it in the Dominican Republic, in Germany, all kinds of areas around the world. This young man has done a lot. He's only, and I want to mention the age because you got to know it, he's only 22 years old, but what a brilliant mind. You had a chance to talk to him a little bit and listen to what he has been doing, and he's got a bright, bright young future. We can all learn from this show, and please make sure you get your notepad out, your pen, because I guarantee you are going to learn. You know this game, it's Baseball Outside the Box. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and this is the show that challenges the status quo. Don't forget, before we start, go to YouTube, Peter Caliendo, go to Tip of the Day. We got a lot of great tips and when it comes to the game of baseball. So let me tell you, we are going to get started, and I want to introduce to you Christian Signorelli. And Christian, how you doing, buddy? Welcome to the show.
Good. Thanks, Pete, for having me on. I'm excited to get into a couple of these topics.
All right. First of all, let me tell our audience, Christian is here from Chicago. He played high school baseball, started off at St. Rita, and then he ended up in Lincoln Way East. And here's a tie-in, which we didn't know. In Lincoln Way East, Paul Babcock, on the last show, Paul was the guest. He talked about Gordy Gillespie, the legendary coach, and the book, The Team. So what a great tie-in. We didn't even know about that. Then he went on to Carthage College, where Augie Schmidt was at. We all know Augie played at LSU and a great college coach. We've known him for a long time. And then during his college career, and this is what's fascinating, and forgot to mention, Carlos Munoz, another connection that all of a sudden we find out. We had Carlos on the show about 3 or 4 episodes ago, the bullpen catcher for the World Series champion Houston Astros. So there is a great tie-in here that we didn't even know about all this. But get this, Christian goes on to Germany, takes a trip to Germany's junior year in college, and he's going to tell you all about that. And then we're gonna all tie this in into international baseball, into the development of young prospects, how we can do things better with some of these prospects coming from around the world. That's how we'll end it up. But Christian, tell me right now, we want to talk about your experience. A little bit about, you said when you went to high school and college and how you came up with all this. I know you ended up in Germany on a program. Yep. And I want to get to that. But how did you kind of get into the love of the game of baseball?
Probably like most people who've been on the podcast or listened to it, started very, very young. Loved the game, really a lot of passion for it, and played through high school and, like you said, into college a little bit. I've had a little bit of a turbulent career in terms of injuries. I didn't take care of myself exactly the right way early on. I didn't understand the importance. I kind of neglected the detailed side of stretching and staying healthy. And ultimately, that's what kind of, slowed me down a lot in my career. I don't think I was ever, destined for Major League Baseball or anything along those lines, but it definitely caused my career to end earlier than I had hoped for when I had started. And ultimately it led me into what I have been doing and working on for the last couple of years now, which is, essentially that what you talked about, working with those international prospects and kind of opening up the game to new markets throughout in Europe and Germany specifically, and just a whole new whole new avenue of potential players and fans. And that's kind of how I got into all that, though, was the lack of being able to stay healthy.
Well, let's talk about that lack before we get into your trip to Germany. That's going to be the next thing. Let's talk about that lack. I've had hip surgery at a young age, hip replacements. And I remember, you know, being hurt at times. And, you know, I'm not sure I really worked on my flexibility that well. But let's talk about some of the areas. If you got any recommendations, I mean, this is a great time to bring it up for coaches, players, you know, and parents, because they're all listening to the show. You know, when it comes to young players and in preparation and continual preparation in their development, so that way they don't end up like you and I getting hurt and not being able to play the game longer than we wanted.
Yeah, for me, it was really more that I tried to do too much too fast. And it was terms of like just when I'd go, you know, I spent a lot of time in training and taking lessons and working out. But I neglected the fine details, the work beforehand, the detailed stretching programs and band programs and all of that that you have to, I think you really, now I understand you really have to do before you get into the rest of the good stuff, the meat and potatoes of the training. I just didn't understand that. And I think a lot of the coaches that I had growing up who are, you know, great people, great, mostly, you know, through the junior high era of travel baseball, I had coaches that did not understand, you know, pitch management, helping young kids in their careers in terms of keeping them healthy. They didn't understand that. It wasn't something that I don't think anyone did on purpose, but they neglected that. And ultimately it just kept snowballing. So instead of, you know, I'd make a little correction to something, I'd stretch a little more, I'd work a little bit on something, get a little bit healthier. And then I'd forget about it once I felt just good enough. And I just keep going back into it every couple of years with a new injury. Like I said, I cracked my growth plate, my freshman year at St. Rita, and ended my season early. And then continuing on in high school, again, down the road, end of junior year, just finishing up summer ball, end of junior year, I tore my labrum and missed my entire senior season of high school baseball. And in college, the issues just at that point, after the torn labrum and the surgery, it just kind of never really got back to where it needed to be. And you know, it's just, again, it's just attention to fine details at a young age. Everyone thinks it's not important to get into those type of details, to teach kids how to do the bands the right way. While they're younger, it's kind of neglected. And like I said, it affects you down the road. It's a process starting to do things the right way from the beginning. And unfortunately, I know more than just myself, it's hurt a lot of players that I grew up playing with, is that trying to stay healthy and that difficulties that come with that.
And we're seeing that in the game right now, obviously. And we've talked about it on the show many times, that injuries don't occur at the big league level. I mean, sure, you can get hurt at the big league level, but you know, a lot of injuries are starting off at the young levels, and we just don't know about it. And the player doesn't know about it because maybe the player hasn't gotten hurt yet. And, you know, and we're overthrowing guys and we're pitching guys so much, and it's all about winning. And but here's the area that is interesting. I've always believed, and as a coach for 37 years, I've always loved to study other sports because I think we can learn from them. I got a good friend of mine who's in the NHL. We grew up since 9 years old, Ken McCutt. He's been on the show. He's with the Columbus Blue Jackets. And I've watched him train NHL players. I watched them train young kids. We've talked about training. We've talked about, you know, cross training with the sports. Well, you kind of fell into it a little bit because your junior year, you took a trip to Germany, and this Germany trip all of a sudden ended up in handball. Tell us about that experience and how it got you into the next level of what you've been working on.
Yeah. So when my injuries and all of that had finally put an end to my career, I made the trip to Germany. My family has a good set of friends over there that I was going to see and spend some time with. And he was the father of the family. He was the accountant, and he's part of the staff for a professional handball club there called Rhein-Kloven. It's translated. It's, you know, they're on the Rhine River, and Kloven stands for lion in German. And so they're like a professional handball club there. And I ended up seeing these guys throwing, you know, this this handball, which is three times the weight of a baseball, five times the size and diameter of a baseball, and they're throwing motions. I'm sure, Pete, like you said, I think we talked a little bit about it, was very similar to that of a pitcher throwing, or maybe even an outfielder crow hopping and making a throw to the plate or something along those lines. And they're throwing it hard. They're throwing it really hard. And they have somewhat of a radar gun, and it was somewhere in the upper 60s, mid 60s, with that big ball. And it kind of was like a weighted ball type of thing that, you know, a lot of those weighted ball programs, the ball was similar to one of the bigger balls for the weighted programs, but it was, it's kind of like a soccer ball to give a good description of it. And I was amazed by their ability to throw this thing as hard as they were. And their builds were all very similar to that of a pitcher, 6'2 to 6'5, 220 pounds, just like kind of some of the guys are like Noah Syndergaard build. So I was really excited about it. And I came home after seeing it and I was like, man, I wonder, if any of these guys got a baseball, what they can do with it. So after a little time back here, I think about 6 or 7 months, I was like, yeah, I got to go back. And I ended up going back with all the equipment, like I had said, and the radar guns, and went and got to test a lot of the professional players, as well as some younger age groups for the kind of like a baseline level of, growing up, like what we can expect to see, how fast they were throwing the handball at the younger ages, and just trying to get some data on it, some raw data that no one really has. And that was kind of an exciting start to how the rest of my career has gone since then, and just the short while. But
tell us about some of this data. What were you testing these guys in? And folks, just so you know, when I was in Europe, I watched the handball for young kids, and a lot of the throwing technique is similar. But what was interesting about it is that they were running, they had to move, they had to turn and throw different angles. And so I really thought it was an exciting game, and it would help the throwing aspect of it too. But give us an idea. Yeah. What were you testing more than anything?
Yeah. So I set up a net, like a net that you'd hit into for practice or something. And I had them throwing into the net, from 60 feet 6 inches, the mound, and I gave them a baseball, most of them for the first time ever, and I had the radar gun, I had data for how hard they were throwing, I had if they were throwing strikes, after they were getting the concept down, I started seeing if they could hit the strike zone a little bit. A couple of them actually, like I mentioned to you earlier, some of them were able to throw a little bit of a second pitch in there, a little bit of an off speed pitch, a little like slider type action, because in handball, they do throw a ball that's similar. They do have a variation of the throw that's similar to that of like a slider, or a little bit of like a slurve type of throw. So that they were able to mix in a little bit of that. And it was incredible to see some of the accuracy that these guys were able to dial in after throwing 20 or 30 pitches. And like I said, the data, some of these guys were in the mid 80s to upper 80s for the first time ever touching a baseball.
Were these guys running and doing it, or were you having them doing it from a standstill?
I had them doing it from a standstill, which was a little bit different for them. Most of them do get running throws and handball into the throw, like a crow hop sort of thing. So that was a little bit of a disconnect for them. But they were able to figure it out. Like I said, it took them a little bit. Some of them only 15 or so pitches before they started understanding that drive line and flipping the hips through and getting that back leg through. And they were starting to be able to do that a little bit towards the end of their little bullpen sessions.
What did and we're going to talk about this, that you also did some work with some young kids there. But did you ask? Were you curious? These were adults, so. During their career, they started playing this handball probably when they were young. Did they have any injuries? Any rotator injuries, elbow problems?
Yeah,
or more like tennis players.
Yeah, they're overhand throwers, so they do end up having those. Some of them had shoulder injuries in the past because it's like I said, it's overhand. It's that your arms, it's not necessarily made to make that motion, and they're throwing a heavier ball, so it's even more stress on some of those ligaments and the elbow, but. But it's an interesting point also to mention that with that weighted ball, their arms were in those joints and in those ligaments and stuff. It really created very strong muscles for throwing muscles for them, because essentially, like I said, they've been doing a weighted ball program since they were 6, 7 years old when they first started playing handball. So now they're able to get through that early part healthy, and they do move up the weights of the ball as they get older. They don't start at the professional weight. It's a little lighter, smaller ball. So they're able to not have as many injuries growing up, but if they were just using a regular size ball, so they're able to phase into it a little bit. But they threw – a lot of these guys were throwing very, very hard for the first times touching a baseball because of
– what velocities were you getting from some of these guys?
Yeah.
Without you know, the proper movements for pitching, but just by throwing it, what velocity were you getting?
I was getting 80s and not 80, low 80s all the way up to 90, 89, 90. A couple of the bigger guys were able to just kind of rock and throw. They were able to get a little bit of, like, they rocked a little bit in their motion. It wasn't necessarily straight up and down and then getting through, but it was a legal throwing motion, though. At the end of the day, it was a legal pitching motion. They weren't making any movements that were technically out of bounds. It was a little bit unorthodox, but they were throwing, and some of them were able to dial in strikes in the, you know, mid 80s.
Wow. And Christian, maybe you weren't able to see this, but I was just curious. We didn't get a chance to talk about this. Were you able to see any of their training and, you know, how they trained to throw?
Yeah. They do. They actually, one weird thing to mention in there is they actually put pine tar on their hands when they throw this ball, because the ball is bigger. So they want to get a grip on it, and they want to get a little spin on the ball. They do throw a weird little twist at times, like I said. So they throwing an off-speed pitch of them isn't going to be completely unnatural for them, because a lot of times they're trying to deceive the goalie, get a weird bounce. So they do throw a spin on the ball at times, and that pine tar helps them do that.
So what, any type of, like, training technique that they used that you thought, you know, was interesting to relatable, you know, in other words, where they were trying, you know, they had some type of drill that they tried to, you know, they work so that way they can get better at throwing the ball.
Yeah. I would equate it to more of like a quarterback camp style of throwing, like where, you know, they warm up on, you know, on their knee. I mean, baseball players do it too, but they get through, they're on their knees and they're finishing through the throws a little bit. They're throwing their little spins on it. They get into a little bit of a stand up position. They're using their core. They're using the same muscles. So they're warming up similar to like how you see quarterbacks warm up before a game or something like that. Like, you know, just getting through their throws and warming up, like playing catch, like you do for baseball or quarterbacks or whatever. It's very similar in terms of their throwing and warming up. It was kind of incredible to see, and how they've never, you know, seen a baseball before, and then were able to do that. It just shows how, you know, the games are very different in style. It's basically like soccer with the throwing motion involved in throwing the ball into the net. But in terms of warming up, in terms of throwing motion, you could equate it to a quarterback or a pitcher very easily.
Okay, and now you worked with, and obviously you gave him a baseball to do this with.
Yeah.
You worked with some young kids. Tell us about that experience with the young kids.
The interesting thing about it, we went through the same type of structured, I would say it was like a little camp that we put on. Same style, same warm-ups, taught them, you know, went through the throwing motion with them of how they were supposed to throw it prior to them starting their bullpen session. The thing that was interesting was that some of these kids, the younger kids, actually were able to conceive the motion a little bit easier than the older, the professional club. I think is because they had to unlearn less, right? Because they haven't gone through it for as long of a time as the pros did. So they were actually able to understand some. There was a little lefty kid in there. He was probably, I think he was 13 or so. And he had a really, really, by the end of it, he wasn't throwing hard, but he had a really smooth throwing motion, pitching motion at the end of his 25 minutes that we had worked with him. And it was really incredible. And he probably had the best motion out of everyone that had came through.
So you know, after you do all this testing, all of a sudden, and it gets interesting, all of a sudden you're heading back home. Tell us what happens next.
So I didn't necessarily know what to do with the data, but once I was home with it, I kind of just kept it all on a file and everything and had it ready just in case I had ran into anyone that might be interested in seeing that. And I did, because I was at the WBC World Baseball Classic there in 2017 and sat next to one of the Bureau scouts at the time. and went through this data with him. And at first he was really like hesitant to have a conversation, just like some random kid talking. And then as I gone into it, he was like, oh, you actually have some interesting stuff here that he was willing to sit and look at and realize that I wasn't just, you know, asking him dumb questions or whatever. And, we went through it all and he became very interested in that. And he actually took me to the last 2 days of the WBC for free. And I sat in the scout seats right behind home plate for when the United States won that whole thing, and, was there and got to meet, you know, a couple scouts and general managers, and got to go through some of that data that I had collected with them. And they were very interested in it, and they all gave me cards and stuff to stay in touch and do if I ever ran camps and stuff there, to keep collecting videos and bring it back to them. So it was great.
Did they explain to you why they were interested in some of this data? Were they looking outside the game of baseball for potential, baseball players?
Yeah. I mean, you have prototypical pitcher, you know, type bodies that are playing the sport, and I explained that to them. So and right off the bat, there's interest in it because of that. And then you got the throwing motion mixed in, and essentially these guys are doing weighted ball programs, like I said, from 6 years old. And they're if they can, you know, first time touching a baseball, be a mid upper 80s and starting to hit the strike zone, they were interested in that. There's a whole nother market, and there's such a big, big market for handball in Europe. And I think it's something a lot of people don't even realize that's out there, but there's so many, you know, nations over that play handball, and so many great, you know, potential pitchers. So they were like, if this thing starts to expand and you end up doing camps over there, which we were talking about doing and still are talking about doing, running these clinics where we're giving young 15, 16, 17 year old kids a chance to learn how to pitch over a couple month period of time, that'd be sponsored by a group over there, SAP. They were interested in hosting that and doing work with it. So we were like really interested, and they were really interested to see the results from all of that.
Cool. Now tell us what happens next after this, after you leave Germany. And I remember, folks, you're talking about, this is his junior year. He just graduated from college, and all this is happening. So tell us what happens next.
Right. So from there, the Bureau Scout that I mentioned actually he's running a pretty big, prospect clinic down in Mexico. And he was the head of the player development for them. And every year this specific organization pumps out 2 to 4 major league prospects that get signed every year from there. Some pretty big signings over the last 5 or 6 years. They're really growing in size. It's actually a fantastic organization from the training that they get, and all of that. And I spent some time down there with him on that, and ended up essentially what he had expressed to me was that, you know, there's a disconnect between, players in their organizations and the outside world from the organization once they're signed. You know, there's a lot of changing, moving pieces that they're, and it affects their ability at the end of the day. Their on the field performance is affected by all of these outside culture sort of issues that they face when they first come over. So we had exchanged a lot of notes on how it has gone for them in the past, for these players in the past, and what he wanted to see for these players in the future. And we essentially started an LLC that helped give these players a platform to stand on when they first come over to the United States and are in their organizations. So that was kind of how it started. And from there, it's gone a lot of different directions. And I'm sure we'll touch on, you know, some of the things that, we find that are very important for these players' production as athletes and as human beings on and off the field and after their careers. There's a lot of things that go into the components that make up a successful player. And we've learned quite a bit from this process.
You know, and what's interesting is here you are, you go from Germany, all of a sudden you end up in Mexico, and now, then we're in the Dominican Republic. We haven't talked about that yet. And I know our audience knows that, you know, we've got people listen from all over the world, and they know the background that, you know, I've been in Dominican a lot and Cuba, just got back from Cuba, been there about 9 times. You know, I've got a broad perspective, I believe, of world baseball, and a pretty good one. But here you are at 22 years old, you're already in, you know, Germany, and all of a sudden you got some stats that you're building, you know, when it comes to looking at other players and other sports, which happens to be handball. Then all of a sudden, you know, you're in Mexico and you start start thinking and putting all this together, and you start thinking about, you know, because of your experience in the Dominican, you also start thinking, you know, these players need a lot more help than I thought. Because in fact, even I thought that the major, you know, I know major league teams have a lot of interest in helping their own players that they sign, and they want to do a lot for them. But there's a lot of these guys out there, and they've only got so much time that they can, you know, give all these guys. And we know that they're not all going to be in the big leagues. They're all not out top prospects. So tell us how everything's coming together and the ideas that you've got now that can really, really help a lot of Latin American players. And we can get into the Dominican if you like, too. That'd be great.
Sure, yeah. Well, so there's a lot of problems with the current pipeline, basically, international player prospect pipeline, right? The conversion from being a prospect in the organization to a professional. And then even prior to that, how it works with the academies that train these players that essentially sell them to organizations at the end of the day, right? They're training these players. And at the end of the day, when the player signs for whatever amount of money they signed for based off of what the organization deems their value to be, these academies, as you know, the you know, Buscones down in Dominican Republic, they're making their money off of these players. So that being said, the players are somewhat commoditized in terms of how good they take these kids at 12 years old, and they'll train them in any ways necessary to make them as good as they can possibly be. And then at 16, which is the equivalent of a sophomore in high school here in the United States, professional organizations go down and they sign the players right there for a lot less money than at times than what they're actually worth. Some of them make obviously a lot of money. So there's some signings you see every year that are getting, you know, 2 million, 1.5 million, even up to 3 million. But then there's a lot of guys that you're not seeing, a lot of guys that are getting signed for $25,000, $15,000, $8,000 that are giving up schooling, which a lot of them give up at 12 years old to train in the academies. They're giving up school. They're giving up all their outside life, any ability to make money for them families, which they need down there, and especially in the Dominican Republic. And they're trading it in for a very, very, very tiny percentage chance that they ever make a major league organization 40-man roster. And that is what they're all going for. But what people don't understand is even after you get signed, you're signed to an organization. If you're just a regular signing in that organization, your chances of becoming a professional baseball player on a 40-man roster are about 3%. And they don't realize that until they're in it and they've given up everything to be able to do that. And that's where we are trying to come into play with some new type strategies to build these players holistically.
I want to get into that. So great spot, because I definitely want to get into that, because now that's your brainchild. This is a great idea. And you're going to explain all that, but I also want you to give some statistics, because you gave me some stats about some of the players down there, certain team and what it could be more than one team. Basically, you said the percentage of what they're going to make, but you gave me the actual number of players.
Yeah. I'll give you an example of one of the clubs that we did a study on. We looked at for the past 10-11 seasons, every player that was signed to that organization, this specific organization, that spent time or played a season or a few games, however you want to look at it, down in the Dominican Prospect League, which is a post-signing league for Latin American signs, not even just Dominican Republic, but that's Venezuela, Mexico, some of the Puerto Rican signings. They go down and they play in the Dominican Prospect League, and that's where they begin their careers. So for most of the signings, for every organization, they all do this. So this one specific organization, for 10 or 11 years worth of data, they logged roughly about 900 players that have different players that have played a game, at least one game in the Dominican Prospect League. And out of that 900 or so, six have ever logged time on a major league 40-man roster for this organization, just six. And really, to be honest with you, only one of them have had one of those six had a successful career in Major League Baseball. Just one.
Wow. And this could be very interesting because as you get into your idea here, this could help a lot of players continue their career, not just in baseball, but in other things, but it could also help major league teams get a lot better in educating the players. Correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the important part because what we looked at was, well, that's crazy, but what do we reference this against? How do we understand that this is crazy? I mean, you can look at it and say, okay, you know, 3% of these kids are actually having careers. Most, and the other statistic for that set there was that out of all of those players, the average lifespan of a player in that organization lasted for roughly 3 years before they were either cut or traded. And that was, for most of them, it was being cut. So they lasted about 3.5 years from 16 to about 19 or 20 years old. That's what they did. And then they go home empty handed. But to reference it, that 3% of them, you know, reaching the Major League 40-man roster, the American signed player on average, whether that be after post high school or college, is about four times higher percentage clip of making 40-man rosters than the Latin American counterpart. And for us, that's pretty alarming because you can look and see on an average, you know, if you like, again, on a per player basis, you compare the two, you know, the two players, the American player and the Latin American player. You can look at the Dominican Republic player. In terms of talent at 16 years old, your Latin American player is going to probably in most cases blow the American player out of the water. And so the question really is, where's this disconnect as to why they're failing at such a higher rate? Compared to the American player, why are they having such fewer cases of success?
Absolutely.
And it's not in any, and this is, you know, in my time of talking to scouts and directors of player development for multiple organizations that players that I was working with were underneath. It's not based off of talent a lot of cases. It's based off of everything else. Pure talent, it's very equal, or like I said, it favors the Latin American player. It's just, there's a whole lot of outside things that organization, a lot of outside factors that are being missed by major league organizations they're failing to give them the necessary tools, sustainable necessary tools for success. And that's like I said, you know, I want to talk a little bit about it.
Let's talk about those tools. You know, start first of all. I'm gonna throw one out at you. I just want you to give me your opinion here, and then you can go right into the other ones. Well, let's talk about, you know, what about the training? Does training have anything to do with this? The time they spent down there at the academies, the work they're getting done, you know, whether it's the biomechanical work, the movements, you know, whatever it may be, is training an issue?
Well, for the players in the Dominican Republic specifically, like they're training from 12 to 16 years old every single day, 6, 7, 8 hours a day. And that's what I saw firsthand, and that's what the players will tell you. So in terms of pure training time, they're logging a lot more time than the American player is. In terms of equipment and things like that, it's not even close. The American player at those age groups, the equipment is unbelievable. They wouldn't know what to do with all that good equipment. But they just work a lot harder and spend a lot more time. So training-wise, they're logging a lot more time than the American player. That's not an issue in terms of getting time on the field. It's once they're signed, they're expected, you know, like I said, when they're signing, they're 16 years old. That's the equivalent to a sophomore in high school in the United States. If you imagine a sophomore in high school getting signed to a major league organization and expecting to perform at such high expectations, you know, there's a lot of pressure put on these kids. And for the Latin American player, a lot of them, their families are counting on them to have success, you know, to help their families survive financially, to give them opportunities that they don't currently have. So there's a ton of pressure put on these kids at, you know, very, very young age. And that's one area that's, you know, that I think off the bat should be changed from 16 to 18. Christian,
the one positive from the past to now, I mean, it's not a big one, but it did help a little bit. Believe it or not, they were sending the 16-year-olds to the U.S. The old days where they really got lost. Now, at least they keep them down in the academies, but good point. you know, at 16 years old, even in the academies, that can't be easy for them.
So I mean, now,
what's the solution?
I was just 16 a handful of years ago, and I was, you know, I'm not the brightest person in the world at 16. Like, just to be able to, and to be honest with you, a lot of them, yes, do start in the academies, but the bigger name guys that are getting signed for the million, 2 million, they're coming straight to the United States. They're
right away.
Right away. They're leaving their families, leaving everything behind. It's just pure chaos in their world for them at that time.
So what's your solution, and what are you working on to make this, to help the system? Because that's what we're trying to do here. I mean, we're trying not only help the system, you know, at the major league level, but it, you know, we can learn, you know, from all kinds of levels, and other countries can learn from the development aspect. Because a lot of countries send players to the U.S., not just the Dominicans. They just happen to have a lot more in Latin America.
Yeah, and this is applicable, just like you said, for a lot of different groups of people and different starting different things and stepping into new environments. It's more so a holistic thing that they're missing, right? They beat the technical stuff, you know, to death. They work on it all the time, you know, every single day when they're in these academies and they're here in the United States. There's no shortage of training the technical side of the skill set, the technical skills, the ground balls, the pitching motion, the hitting, all of that is being trained and drilled into their heads every day. They don't have a problem with that. Mm-hmm. Where the issue becomes, you know, more clear is when they're trying to live outside of the organization. If all you do every single day is if you're, you know, just take someone who's working in a different area, different field. If all I did was work on, you know, some job that, you know, you may or may not have a choice really at that point at 16, 17, you have to do what, you know, you've been trained to do your whole life. You're going to get burnt out pretty quick. So they're not having outlets. One, to be able to, a lot of them don't speak English and they're not being trained adequately in learning the English language because they're bouncing around everywhere. So they get in and they train a little bit here in English and then they move around and they're getting a little bit here, but it's not sustainable. You have to learn a language, you have to practice it all the time and you have to be immersed in it a lot. And again, they're being immersed in it in the culture here, but they're only doing it on the baseball field. And then after after the practice is over, games are over, they're talking with their teammates that are from Latin America. So they're speaking Spanish. They're not really talking in English at all. So they're really missing the boat. A lot of these organizations are missing the boat on giving them the proper tools to learn English. And again, there's tools on applications and stuff that they could do now, but it's a lot of them don't even know where to start with that. And it's not really personalized for them. So we want to give them an opportunity to learn English at their pace, whenever they can, is however often as they can on bus rides, in the locker room, during spring training, when they're sitting around, give them an opportunity, give them a tool to be able to learn this. That's one thing, Peter, we really think is important that's being missed is communication with their coaches and communication outside of the organization with people, build relationships here. They're not able to do that. And that's tough. And they're away from their families for the first time. They're having limited communication with people. It's very difficult. Financial literacy is another massive issue. 16-year-old kids are being expected to, you know, take care of financial responsibilities. Even if it's, you know, only a few thousand dollars, that money is usually gone very quickly when they get these bonus checks and stuff. It's gone. And you're not getting a lot after that. You make below minimum wage a lot of times for these players when they first come over here and are playing in the minor leagues and you know, low A ball and rookie ball. They're not making much money at all. They're not making really any money. So not putting anything away, and it's going very quickly, and their families are not taking care of themselves on it. Like I said, they're either sending it home to their families or they're getting some money for the first time and they're spending it on things that they shouldn't be spending it on. No one's teaching them. They didn't have schooling. No one's teaching them to put money away, and their organizations that they trained with for all the years down in their academies and their countries that they came from, they're taking, you know, at times 40 to 70% of those bonus checks, usually around the 40-50% mark, which is just the beginning. It's unbelievable. So these are the issues, and we want to give them some tools for financial literacy. Okay, there's a whole I can go into a long-winded speech of the components that make up that financial literacy section, but it's boring. You can get the idea of what we want to do with them and do it in a fun type of atmosphere, a fun type of learning tool via application that's accessible anywhere. we want to give them tools to communicate with people who have had success outside of the organization, right? Outside of their team that they're with.
Mm-hmm.
Ex-professional athletes, Latin American athletes that can talk to them about specific situations they might be in, how to handle a specific individual in the organization, whether that be a coach, director of player development, someone they're maybe not having a good relationship with, and understanding how to deal with that and what they can do to make that a better situation for themselves and for their team, how to work with that type of stuff. And lastly, we want to put some sort of psychological or some psychology expert who can deal with these players, because a lot of them are dealing with, like I said, very stressful situation, being away from families for the first time, and understanding that there's not a lot that they can do at the moment to counteract that, because they're being trained at baseball all day, every day, and they're not forming relationships outside of the field because they can't speak the language. So they're put in a little bit of a box, and a lot of them get pretty stressed out, and it's kind of a depressing atmosphere to be in after a while. A lot of their teammates and friends are getting cut every year, so they'll lose a couple friends, they'll get cut, or they'll get sent somewhere else. There's to a different level of the organization. There's not a lot of sustainability. Everything is very fleeting. The structure is fleeting and changing, and it's a difficult atmosphere and situation to be able to thrive in.
And Christian, all this that you talked about, the solution aspect of it, your dream here is to create this app that they can be part of. And what you told me was interesting. You're not looking to charge the player for this.
No, absolutely not. That's the key element here. And that's as we're building this now, and we've formed some very, very good relationships with people that are going to help take this to the next level. We work, like I said, you mentioned, Carlos is a great example of someone that we've been working with on this, and it's kind of green lit the project even further with his expertise and his mindset coming into it and giving us things that we should think about further. Guys like that have been instrumental to giving us, the platform we want to create for this. And again, like you said, we're not charging a player for this. They pay enough to their agencies or their academies for their services. We think this is on the onus of the organization or the major league MLB organization as a whole to service these players in this department, because if they're going to sign kids at 16 years old and take them as sophomores in high school, take them away from their families and put them in academies and put them in A ball or rookie ball or expect them to produce, they should be giving them sustainable avenues to grow in and to further their holistic self rather than just the technical side of things. And that's why I think that disconnect is so big, is because those things aren't being worked on with that level of focus that it needs to be at currently at. It's not at the right spot.
And at the same time, you're going to have to educate them on the technology aspect if they're going to be using some type of app to educate themselves with this.
Well, the good thing about it is a lot, like I said, I've worked with a handful of these players now for over a year and got to understand their difficulties. A lot of them do understand technology. They do. They love their phones and music and stuff. It's a part of their. They've used it, for many years. It's not like where they didn't have phones. They do understand how to use their phones, and the application is going to be, like I said, we're in the process of building it now and having success with that. It's a lot of it is in Spanish to begin with so that they can understand how that's working. And it's very customized for the player. That's the key, one of the key things, key elements to this. It's very customized for the player. So that being said, there's not going to be a ton of training that goes into using that platform. It's going to be pretty self-explanatory and like I said, accessible anywhere in pretty much any type of condition.
Fantastic. But I tell you what, it sounds outstanding. And listen, folks, we're going to put Christian's email, C. Signorelli, and we'll have it at carthage.edu.
Yeah, we'll just keep using the college one for now.
Yeah, that's okay. That's all right. And that's going to be on the show notes, so you don't have to worry about the spelling. It'll be on the show notes. Check it out on baseballoutsidethebox.com. It'll be listed there, so you can get a hold of Christian if you got any ideas. If you think you can be part of this, he's willing to listen to anything. Well, the main reason I wanted to get Christian on the show because of the fact that He's done such a lot of work in a very short period of time, taking a lot of risk, you know, flew places, not only Germany, Mexico, Dominican Republic, you know, you're talking about a true, true entrepreneur in the game of baseball. And I know there's going to be a lot of people listening that are going to contact you. And hopefully a major league team is listening. I know we got pro players, pro scouts that listen. Hopefully somebody will contact you. Christian,
For those people, and let me just add a note if I can.
Sure.
For those, you know, people in that position, those, you know, ex, you know, professional athletes or current professional, you know, baseball players or whatever it may be, coaches, however it may be, that input on you know, things that we could be missing as a team here on what we're putting into the application and how we're going about that process. Any and all information to us is extremely useful in the stages that we're in right now. And we really value anyone's input if they're willing to share it. And so I just wanted to add that note in and just say, you know, we're really excited to hear anyone that has suggestions and please don't hesitate.
Absolutely. Hey, here's an interesting part. I'm going to get off the app for a second. I'll get it off the project. But because of your perspective, I want to get your perspective here. You know, give a little advice to our folks in the game of baseball, especially if there's players listening, but parents too. You know, the game of baseball is becoming more and more competitive. It's, you know, there's over 130 countries playing the game, but you've been to Latin America. You know, these kids are hungry. They are, you know, they can't wait to get to professional baseball. Give them the difference between, you know, some of the things that their young kids there in the Dominican or in Latin America do compared to the U.S. that is detrimental to some of our kids because maybe they're not spending enough time doing something that they should be doing because, you know, to compete against some of these kids in Latin America.
Well, yeah, the competition and the people that won't really like the application at the end of the day, unfortunately, will be a lot of the American players that are, you know, that if this app gets used the right way and over the course of many years, you know, you'll see that gap close a little bit between prospect, you know, the prospect and professional rate for the Latin American player, that conversion will get a little bit better. So there'll be, unfortunately, if there's more of them, those players going in and having success, then unfortunately there will be less American players or, you know, that's just the true math on it. And I don't, you know, that's not the goal, but the goal is to give everyone an equal playing field. And if they're going to take these kids, they should have an equal playing field. Equality and equal opportunity is extremely important, I think. And that's why our application is being launched. But to answer your question, the difference, you know, is work ethic, I would say, at the end of the day. These kids, it's not the parents that are forcing these kids to do this. In Latin America, these kids, you know, in speaking with them, there's a certain, I mean, because of the atmosphere in which they're coming from, in a lot of cases, it's very unpleasant. There's not a lot of opportunity for these kids to have great successes from where they're, when, you know, in their original country, they're in Latin, you know, name it, Latin American country. A lot of them are very difficult to grow up in. So these kids have a real fire to go get it. And playing travel ball and doing that through the years and playing high school ball, there's a lot of kids that are, you know, kind of forced into it a little bit here. They may not really want to be there. They might be, you know, hoping to get out of practice early or whatnot. These kids don't look for that at all. They, like, when no one's looking, they're working harder than, you know, I can say for myself, I worked here in front of coaches, you know, that when no one's watching, they're trying to get better because it's their lifestyle. And that's their mentality, is like, they're going to get it and they don't do it for the wrong reasons. That's one big difference that I would say. And I just do it because you love the game and you want to be there rather than, you know, someone might be making you be there. Cause otherwise there's a lot of different things you could spend your time doing here.
Great stuff, Christian. Love it. I'll tell you what, that is great advice. And that's what I wanted to get out of this, was some advice for some of our players here in the U.S. because you're starting to see those numbers starting to change. I mean, they've been changing for a while. Latin American players have been coming, and Cuba hasn't even opened up yet. When Cuba opens up, then the numbers are really going to start changing. Our guys just got to start, you know, if you love the game, work at it, like you said, and work, you know, when people aren't looking. All right, man. Last one, this is your time. If there's anything, you know, any advice for our coaches, players, parents around the world, again, advice that could help them become better players, help our coaches become, you know, a little bit better, from your perspective that you've seen, you know, any last minute things, and then we'll close out the show.
Right. Like, and it kind of contradicts a little bit my last point, which is I obviously do everything you do 100%. And that's something I, you know, didn't always do. Like, it's not like I did that all the time. And I, now looking back, I wish I would have focused on those details and not only worked harder, but, you know, smarter. So doing things the right way, not just rushing through them. And whether that be coaches training kids on how to use the bands, you know, throwing bands the right way, or doing all the stretches the right way and before practice and after practice, focusing on those fine details and learning how to do them early so that when they get to high school, they're ready to have the knowledge on how to do these things the right way and they can hit the ground running. Because it's so much, so fast paced. And it's like, oh, you know, get through this. We only have an hour and a half for practice time. Let's skip some of that stuff. Let's just get right into it. Well, that's what my mentality was, and that's what I did, and a lot of the coaches had us doing. And unfortunately for me, like I said, my arm was never healthy. I barely made it through seasons. I just by the thread, I would finish seasons. And it was because there was a lack of attention to the right detail and working smarter rather than rushing through something and doing it like slamming your head against the wall to just get a little bit better, and rather than focusing on the details and doing it the right way from the beginning.
All right. Coming from a very, very young man, a lot of experience in a very short period of time. And I love it because, you know, players, especially if you're listening, you know, some of you guys are almost Christian's age. So sometimes it's better coming from somebody your age than it is from somebody being in a game 37 years that sounds like their dad or their grandfather, you know, telling them what to do all the time. Christian, awesome,
it's
not man.
Like your grandfather saying it, but it's true. Yeah, I wish I would have done it.
Definitely, especially nowadays. And
My arm still hurts me now, so I wish I would have done it differently from the beginning.
Yeah, we all look back, but you got a good you got a good perspective now. You don't have to wait another 20 years to look back and say, you know, what I should have done. You already know.
Yeah,
and have a pretty good idea. Thanks for being on the show, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Pete. It was a good time.
All right, Christian Signorelli, a young entrepreneur. You heard the show. Give him a shout. On the show notes will be his email. We appreciate you joining today. We love listening to you. Don't forget, we love getting your emails. Email me at petercaliendo@att.net. Check out YouTube, Peter Caliendo, Tips of the Day. We love hearing from you, so don't be afraid. Email us. We'll answer you right away. Hey, special thanks to Brian Kroc, our producer, on the other side of the window with the Lineup Media Group. And again, special thanks to Christian Signorelli. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo. This is Baseball Outside the Box. You have a great coaching day, and I'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.